This is Radio Superior 1950, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the land of lakes. Jack McKenna here. It's Friday, September 15th, 1950. Lou Martin is in with the 6 o'clock news. We have the Boy Scout Report. Rabbit Ray is in with the sports. And it's the fall football openers this weekend, folks. Nice football sweater, Lou.
I love this time of the year. Cool weather, changing leaves, and high school and college football.
Hot dogs, hot chocolate, cheese curds.
Would you even like sports if you couldn't eat?
What kind of crazy talk is that? How can there be sporting events without concession stands? The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by the Superior and Douglas County Christmas Seal Drive. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. General MacArthur is directing Marines and infantry at the Incheon beachhead in the first major United Nations offensive of the Korean War. We begin our world shortwave report from Japan.
Johnson in Tokyo. Personal aid directed by General Douglas MacArthur, American Marines and infantry stormed ashore on Korea's west coast today. The surgical strategy is far behind red battle lines and knifed swiftly under fire into the big fort of Incheon. The landings were made at the Seoul Harbor, the red-held South Korean capital, 22 miles inland. Covered by bombardment from British and American warships, the Leathernecks landed first at 6:30 a.m. 11 hours later, the U.S. 10th Army Corps went ashore. Led by tanks, they drove 2 miles into Incheon on their first lunge. United Nations Commander General MacArthur planned the bold operation and was on hand to direct the landing. Quoting the general, "The Navy and Marines have never shone more brightly than this morning." He says the deep amphibian penetration might break the backbone of the Korean Red Army. South Korean Marines landed at the same time on Korea's east coast. These coordinated thrusts deep into Red territory were the kickoff of the long-awaited United Nations offensive. This may turn the tide, coming after a series of bitterly fought Allied withdrawals that began with the tank-led North Korean assault across the 38th parallel June 25th. With warships slamming heavy shells into concealed Red Shore positions, the Marines landed on Wolmi Island. It is connected to Incheon by a half-mile causeway. Carrier planes slammed rockets at the shore guns, but the Marines still were under heavy fire. Infantrymen were held back to take advantage of Incheon's exceptionally high tide. At 5:30 p.m., they went ashore and drove 2 miles into Incheon, a city of 300,000 within 30 minutes. Associated Press correspondent Relman Morin with the forces reported brown pillars of smoke billowed into the overcast sky set up by the shells of warships. The Allied landing forces were the strongest assembled since World War II. They compared with the biggest amphibious operation in the Pacific during the Japanese War. AP correspondent Russell Bryans reported 262 ships put the Marines and Doughboys ashore and protected them there. In the fleet were 194 American vessels, 12 British, 3 Canadian, 2 Australian, 2 New Zealand, 1 French, and 1 Dutch. 32 U.S. ships leased to Japan, and the balance were South Korea. In Moscow, the Russian press is reporting an enemy amphibious landing was repulsed by the North Koreans. Those dispatches didn't say where, but presumably referred to the Incheon operation. In Tokyo, this is Mac Johnson reporting.
This is Frank Tremaine reporting from Pacific Headquarters in Pearl Harbor. The USS Missouri, the world's mightiest ship, went into action today in the Korean War. The mighty Mo stood off the east coast of Korea, blazing away with 16-inch guns at Samchak, a red-held fort on the Sea of Japan. Samchak is near where South Korean Marines landed on the east coast and across Korea from Incheon, where U.S. Marines and Doughboys went ashore behind enemy lines. The battleship made an 11,000-mile speed dash to the Sea of Japan from Norfolk, Virginia. En route, she encountered a hurricane off Cape Hatteras, dodged a tropical storm at Panama, and rode into Korean waters on the tail of a typhoon. The big battleship went aground January 17th off Old Point Comfort, Virginia, in Chesapeake Bay, much to the chagrin of the entire Navy. In World War II, the mighty battleship took part in the Iwo Jima and Okinawa campaigns and was in the 3rd and 5th Fleet raids on the Japanese home islands. It was on her deck that the Japanese formally surrendered on September 2nd, 1945. At Pearl Harbor then, this is Frank Tremaine calling Korea. Come in, Korea.
Hello, this is Max Jordan with the U.S. 2nd Division in Korea. U.S. soldiers testified today at least three of their buddies were thrown into a fire by their captors on the Western Front. The grisly tale of this latest in a series of red atrocities against American prisoners came to light during a U.S. 2nd Division investigation. The Americans were captured when the Reds overran an advanced command post the night of August 31st. The position fell during the communist drive that rocked the United Nations defenders back on their heels. Number of witnesses told the Army Inquiry Board they saw their fellow soldiers, some of them wounded, thrown into a roaring fire which had been built for that purpose. Sergeant Lester Markham of Vaughn's Mill, Kentucky, had a squad of Americans and South Koreans manning a 75-millimeter gun in the perimeter of the overrun command post. He says he was about 200 yards away. Markham says he saw three Americans thrown into the fire by the North Koreans. One screamed, "Don't do it! Don't do it!" Sergeant H. Stevens of Greeley, Colorado, witnessed the fire deaths from a distance of 150 feet. Stevens said the North Koreans made the fiery deathbed with blankets and anything available. With the U.S. 2nd Division in Korea, this is Max Jordan.
This is Collingdale, Pennsylvania. Stan Turner reporting. A young soldier in Korea took a piece of paper from his helmet and wrote a letter to his two daughters back home. That letter was delivered yesterday to the home of 6-year-old Rosemary McCormick and her 3-year-old sister Joan. 3 days ago, their mother was notified that PFC John J. McCormick, 28-year-old paratrooper veteran of World War II and infantry in Korea, had been killed in action. This is what Private McCormick wrote to dear Joni and Rosemarie. "This is Daddy. I want you to listen and pay attention while Mummy reads this to you. Just try to make believe I was there, talking to you. Joni, I don't think you'll remember me because you were a little baby when I had to go away, but I used to sit and hold you a lot. Rosemarie, you should remember me because I used to take you out with me a lot, and I used to buy you candy and sodas, and I used to feel so good when people said you had eyes like mine. I want you both to know that I'd be with you if I could, but there are a lot of bad men in the world, and if they were allowed to do what they wanted to do, little girls like you would not be allowed to go to church on Sunday or be able to go to the school you wanted to. So I have to help fight these men and keep them from coming to where you and Mummy live. I might take a long time, and maybe Daddy will have to go and help God up in heaven. And if I do, I always want you both to be good for Mummy, because she is the best mummy in the whole wide world. I'll be fighting in a few days in a place called Korea, so I'm sending you all the love that's in my heart on this sheet of paper. I carry your picture and Mummy's next to my heart. And if I have to go help God, you'll know that my last thought I had on earth was for the two of you and Mummy. All my love and kisses. Be good, and God bless you, Daddy." In Collingdale, Pennsylvania, this is Stan Turner.
The British government plans on having 5,500 Tommies in action in Korea soon, with 150,000 troops available for any European emergency by next year. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:09. Jack McKenna has this message from Roth's Department Store.
This is a very important message and may be more important than any I've done for quite a while. This is next week's schedule for CX Detects, Superior Douglas County's Christmas Seal. chest X-ray unit. Now, is that important or what? On Monday, September 18th, Maple will have the unit. Union Free High School will be the host. Maple Co-op Store. And the times will be for Maple, 9 to 11:30 a.m., and for Maple at the Co-op Store, 3:30 p.m. On Tuesday, September 19th, Lake Nabagaman Community Hall. Thursday, September 21st, at the Poplar Market. Friday, September 22nd, the unit will be at Wentworth Co-op Store, 9 to 11:30 a.m. And in the afternoon, Ellenson Station at 1 to 3:30. And this message is sponsored by Roths in the interest of community health. It's important, folks, so let's attend. Lou?
10th District Congressman Elvin Okonski has a plan to defeat the Russians. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the story from Ashland.
The United States must take four steps, Lou, if Stalin and communist Russia are to be defeated in their purpose. These were told by Congressman Alvin Okonski in an address before more than 200 at the Courthouse Square tonight. Okonski says the steps are to kick Russia out of the United Nations. Quote, Russia is not fit to associate with decent nations of the world. Second, demand foreign countries stop doing business with Stalin, that they stop feeding him. Third, that aggression be redefined by the United Nations so that it would not only mean military interference, but also political and propaganda interference. And fourth, lay down the ultimatum to Stalin that if Russia interferes with affairs with any other country in any manner, that it will be termed as aggression and that we're going to give him the works. It is time the people of America wake up as to what Stalin is up to, unquote. Okonski predicted the Korean disaster as early as 1938. He says the attack on Finland was the signal for what was to come. Quoting the congressman, the Korean situation is only bait set out by Stalin. There's going to be more of it. Unless we change our present leadership, there is much more to come. End quote. Lou?
Apathy is expected in Tuesday's primary election. Capitol reporter Arthur Bystrom has the story from Madison.
One word describes most Wisconsin voters' reaction to the September 19th primary, apathy. Quoting one candidate, you can't get the voters interested in politics. All they want to talk about is the Korean War and whether it will spread, unquote. State election officials doubt if there'll be a turnout of 500,000 next Tuesday. This would be the lowest primary vote in many years. Republican gubernatorial candidate Walter J. Kohler is campaigning on the issue of continuing what he contends is sound, businesslike Republican government. He's an odds-on favorite to win the primary. His opponent is Merrill lawyer Leonard F. Schmidt, who has been assailing big business and what he says is its domination of big government. The hottest race, if any can be called that, is the Democratic contest for United States Senator. Four candidates seek that nomination, with State Attorney General Thomas Fairchild the man to beat among Democrats. Republican incumbent United States Senator Alexander Wiley has done very little campaigning, but is not expected to have any trouble being nominated over Edward J. Finnan, a Boilermaker from Bristol. In Madison, this is Arthur Bystrom.
Wisconsin's 1950 population is officially 3,421,316. The Bureau of Census reports that that's a 9% rise over 1940. The first English church in Ashland will be installing a new pastor Sunday. The Reverend Andrew Bowe of Superior will be conducting the special service for Reverend Clarence Hansen at 8 o'clock in the evening. Mr. Hansen attended St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota, graduating in 1929. Then he entered the Lutheran Seminary. He has served churches at Muskegon Heights, Michigan, and Washburn, Wisconsin. Jack?
You know, Lou, I'm still thinking about that letter from Private Daddy to his little girls. That got me right here.
5 years ago, we were celebrating the end of World War II. You'd hope the world could keep itself out of another war. We seem to be a slow learning race.
Better be careful. McCarthy might put you on his pinko list. Thanks, Luke. Let's check that forecast for this Friday evening, September 15th, 1950. Cloudy and cooler, with a low of 44 degrees tonight. That's a low. With tomorrow's high at 65. Ooh. perfect football season kickoff weather. And it's music time, friends. Here's one that'll keep you humming until midnight. This is the Cordettes and Mr. Sandman on the Martin and McKenna Pigskin Show.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Bum, 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 bum. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Bum, 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 bum.
Give him two lips like roses and clover.
Bum, 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 bum.
Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone.
Bum, 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 bum.
Don't have nobody to call my own.
Bum, 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 bum.
Please turn on your magic beam. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him the word that I'm not a rover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn on your magic beam. Oh, Mr. Sandman. Bring us a dream. Give him a pair of eyes with a come hither gleam. Give him a lonely heart like Pagliacci, and lots of wavy hair like Liberace. Mr. Sandman, someone to hold.
Someone to hold.
Would be so peachy before we're too old. So please turn on your magic beam.
Cordettes and Mr. Sandman on station KUWS. Dairy Queen at 710 Belknap says, go team this football season. Dairy Queen has pints of ice cream for just 25 cents and quarts for 50 cents. The football season is on. Gerzik Market says, root for the Superior East Orientals, Central's Vikings, the Cathedral Panthers, and State Teachers College Yellow Jackets. After the games, enjoy a delicious snack at the Black Cat Cafe. Oh, yeah. Chicken dinners, choice of chops, fish dinners, and prize steer beefsteaks at 915 Tower Avenue. New owner Bernard O'Connell says, good luck, boys.
We've got a couple of unexpected guests who'll be bursting in here in a moment.
What did you do now?
I didn't do anything. These people just showed up.
Don't tell me it's... Sounds like the Notre Dame song to me.
How can you tell? Let me introduce Colonel Joe Raffaele and station engineer in charge, Joe Gardonio.
Tonight, we're just Joe and Joe, right, Joe?
I did not give you permission to call me by my first name, Gardonio.
Well, I thought we were buds, going to the Cathedral football game and everything. Well, aren't we pals?
As long as you don't put your arm around me or anything like that. Hey, let's get going to that bonfire, or we'll be late. Only slackers are late.
They'll need our expertise starting that conflagration.
And they'll probably need a little help starting the bonfire, too.
Let's play this number now from the Ames Brothers and Sentimental Me on the Martin and McKenna Show.
To prove that we're regular pals, I'll even let you buy the bratwurst.
What a pal!
Now, get your arm off of me.
Sentimental Me. Guess I'll always be so in love with you, don't know what to do. Say- dismantle me. Dreaming while I live, living just to give all my love to you. No one else will do. Sentimental me, reaching for the moon and wishing on a star on my honeymoon. I want to be where. Can't you see? It was meant to be. I'm in love with you. Say you love me too. Sentimental me.
And Sentimental Me on station KUWS.
Let me introduce Mr. Torger Justed and Tom Patterson of the Executive Board of the Gitche-Gumee Boy Scout Council.
Yeah. It was a good year for scouters, wasn't it, Tom?
My official report here.
And let me tell you something. When Tom Patterson signs his name to an official report, well, by golly, you'd better believe it's true.
The Gitche-Gumee Council had 353 Boy Scouts from 44 different troops at Camp Fidelity this summer.
Scouts honor? I like that one.
Torger's the big cut-up among the Scout Masters. He's a stitch. He scares the daylights out of the boys when he sneaks up on them around the campfire after dark.
Torger the Terror. That's what they call me. I tell a mean ghost story, too.
Anyway, Camp Fidelity made 23 non-swimmers into beginners. 99 scouts completed the first-class swim test. 114 passed the camp swim classification class. 10 completed the swimming merit badge. And 4 completed the rowing.
And we only lost 3 non-swimmers this year.
See? That's Torger.
Good old funny Torger the Terrible.
You said it. I should be on the radio.
Oh, and we made many improvements at Camp Fidelity this summer. A new roof on the camp director's cabin. The teepees have been repaired. New counter and shelves at the handicraft lodge. All boats and canoes painted. The campfire area terraced and sodded. Aronson Field fertilized and seeded.
Those scouts, they're good workers. And they work for free, too.
And we replaced the old mattress covers. Boy, was that overdue, huh, Torger?
Young boys away from home, sometimes they have accidents, you know.
And many of the boys worked towards their leadership badges by learning organizational skills, using the compass, identifying nature, and using the axe.
And That hacks training, that includes learning how to sew fingers back on.
Now, that's far enough, Torger. You told me to tell you when you've gone too far, and you've gone too far. So I'm telling you that you went too far with that axe and finger joke.
Oh, it always gets a laugh at the lodge. But thanks, Tom. I know it's true. The mutters out there, they might not think it's funny.
Well, we'll be going. Come, Torger.
Okay.
Torger Justed and Tom Patterson of the Gitche Gumee Boy Scout Council. Well, that was special. A warped Boy Scout leader as a guest.
I thought the axe and fingers joke was pretty funny. Rapid Ray is up next with the sports. He's not funny. But first, let's enjoy this from Tennessee Ernie Ford, and I don't mean Buick, and 16 Tons on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning when the sun didn't shine. I picked up my shovel and I walked to the mine. I loaded 16 tons of number 9 coal. And the straw boss said, well, bless my soul, you load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning, it was drizzling rain. Fighting and trouble are my middle name. I was raised in the canebrake by an old mama lion. Can't know a high-toned woman make me walk the line. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. If you see me coming, better step aside. A lot of men didn't, a lot of men died. One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Tennessee, Ernie Ford and 16 Tons on station KUWS. Hi, Ray.
Hey, I've got some big news.
Hey,
Lou's pretty jealous about someone invading his news turf.
Sorry, Lou, but this is big. The bonfire planned for the Cathedral football game is off. Apparently, something went horribly wrong. Some kind of a fire and explosion. I guess everybody's okay. The police are looking for two men, though.
The Colonel.
And Joe.
We'll keep you posted, fans. Tonight's sports is brought to you by Hams, America's refreshing beer from Minnesota, the land of sky blue waters. Let's talk baseball first, folks. A couple of old pros, Joe DiMaggio and Johnny Mize, are carrying on the noble New York Yankee tradition of winning clutch games. Both in their 12th season, the two are supplying the Bronx Bombers with the power needed to propel them to the 1950 pennant. But that American League is a ding-dong race. The Tigers fell to second place, while the surging Red Sox, led by the other DiMaggio, Dom, make a run at the Yanks. The upstart St. Louis Browns derailed Tom Yawkey's Boston boys today, though, beating them 5-2 behind the stellar pitching of former Yank star Dick Starr. In the senior circuit, the Brooklyn Dodgers are trying their darndest to catch the Philadelphia Phillies. They swept the Cincinnati Reds behind the home runs of Gil Hodges, Billy Cox, Bruce Edwards, and Carl Ferrillo. Some sharp pitching by Preacher Rowe and Ralph Branca also came in handy. The Superior Blues are resting tonight after winning last night to get to the Northern League Finals. They play at Sioux Falls tomorrow. Congratulations to Port Wing along Lake Superior's gorgeous south shore. They started a year ago on a 9-acre tract of land just east of the Wigwam Hotel and now have themselves a brand spanking new athletic field. It'll be used for baseball and football. The dedication is Sunday, with band music at 12:30 and a baseball game at 1. Now, fans, it's football night, although maybe minus one bonfire. Central coach Harry Conley's Vikings started last night losing to Duluth Cathedral at Public School Stadium in Duluth. Right halfback Ronnie Tuverson scored the Vikes' only TD. Superior Cathedral and Two Harbors make an excellent attraction on tonight's gridiron. Fine weather and a fun bonfire. Whoops, scratch that. Fine weather will mean a full house at Municipal Stadium. This is the first football game to be played at the Muni. Until now, groundskeeper Gus Lemieux has only had to worry about getting it ready for baseball. Coach Steve Bichon's Panthers are coming off a big win last week against Hermantown. Let's hope quarterback Jerry Morris stays hot. This is Rapid Ray Paulson, reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. Jake?
Whew. Boy, thanks, Ray. I brought my fur coat and megaphone for tonight's game.
Try a sweater and saddle shoes. Fur coats and megaphones went out in the 20s, Jake.
I try so hard to keep up on my football fashion. Here's the McGuire sisters and... Sincerely, on the Martin and McKenna You Rah Rah Show.
That's the spirit.
Please say.
The McGuire Sisters and Sincerely on station KUWS.
I've made some calls about that bonfire. It seems that some roadies insisted on starting the bonfire. After several failed attempts, an explosion occurred.
Who were they calling rowdies?
Yeah, we were there. We didn't see any unsavory characters.
Well, there was that one guy, Bashand, claimed to be in charge. He was getting rather rowdy, wanted us to leave. The nerve.
You two stink. Really acrid-smelling.
My eyes are watering. Let me guess. You were at the bonfire.
As a matter of fact, we were.
Well, yeah. We're here to make an announcement. Tonight's bonfire has, it's been canceled. There'll be no bonfire, people.
And it's all your fault. There, I said it.
You said you wouldn't. You said you wouldn't tell. You said we were pals forever. I feel betrayed.
I can't take this smell much longer. My stomach is turning.
I'm getting woozy.
Are you two ladies done?
I'm taking a wild guess here. Were you the two guys responsible for the bonfire being canceled?
Hush now, remember, bosom buddy.
Yeah, the cover-up is over. I'm not taking the rap for you, bud.
All we were doing is trying to, start a fire and...
Well, it was one match, like a good Boy Scout.
Which makes it your fault, not mine, you show-off.
If you can't light a fire with one match, you go without. That's Boy Scout code. We take it seriously.
But if you two couldn't start the bonfire, why do you smell like a couple of burnt mattresses?
Well, our hero here, Mr. Gardianazia, lit one match, but promptly blew it out.
I had to sneeze. Yeah, that could happen to anyone. So that's when the Colonel springs into action.
Yep, somebody had to do something. Over 2,000 people were waiting.
So what did the Colonel do?
No excuse. None at all. He took an empty whiskey bottle he found. I suspect he discovered it in his pocket. Filled it with an unknown liquid and made a Molotov cocktail. For shame.
It was a Kaiser cocktail, smarty pants. From WW1. A little liquid, rag on the top. Light it. Toss it on a wood pile and...
Bluey!
Yeah, I don't understand it. It wasn't supposed to go bluey.
Bluey?
The thing, surprise, surprise, exploded on impact. It threw flames and said liquid on a mattress the cheerleaders were using for their cheers. Kind of a trampoline thing.
That's shocking. Nice Catholic girls aren't supposed to do that.
So the mattress is on fire, flames shoot out and burn the paint job of some bigwig's car.
Boy, was the senator mad.
Was his face red?
His face matched his nose.
So the fire department sprays down the mattress, hoses down the wood pile.
And the senator.
Oh, yeah, he was hopping.
Oh, my God.
Ahem.
Right.
Sorry. So in all the commotion, we had to make our getaway.
Well, 2,000 people, none too happy with the colonel, and since I'm his new pal... I'm guilty by association. Kind of a McCarthyism type of thing.
We're done here.
Stay tuned, folks, for Dimension X, Ozzy and Harriet, and Friday Night Boxing from Madison Square Garden. We'll be back, same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and a mob isn't waiting outside for us with tar and feathers.
That's the second time this year.
For Lou Martin, then, this is Jack McKenna wishing one and all a good night.
I'll tell you what, Skinny. We'll listen to the game on the radio at my place. The wife can make some mean hot hottie totties, and we'll have a fire in the fireplace.
That sounds promising.
I'll light it.
Of course. The missus won't let me have matches in the house.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1950, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Paul Guggenheimer, Duke Skorich, Tom Martinson, Don Hansen, Ray Paulson. All events reported on Radio Superior 1950 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.